Nemo and Pirates, whose huge box office success is propelling Disney toward a record $3 billion year at the box office, as well as boosting just-released fourth-quarter earnings, in which profit more than doubled, and operating earnings rose 54%. But as women in evening gowns and men in business suits pass through security checks and gather for cocktails, everyone is buzzing about Roy Disney and Stanley Gold, who were certainly not on the guest list. Michael, I know this has been a long week. Phil Collins, the singer and composer of the score for Tarzan, among other Disney projects, says into the microphone as he kicks off the entertainment, "We're here to help you forget all that." At the center of the ceremony is a filmed tribute to Eisner, with testimony from Steve Martin, Tim Allen, John Travolta, and both Harvey and Bob Weinstein of Miramax, despite their ongoing disputes. Even Jeffrey Katzenberg had gotten a call from a secretary in Eisner's office asking if he would participate by contributing a segment to the tribute to Eisner. Katzenberg could only wonder what was going through Eisner's mind. He and Eisner weren't on speaking terms, and he was also insulted that a secretary had made the request. He didn't return the call. Eisner says that he expressly said that Katzenberg was not to be asked, but that someone in his office must have been overzealous. There are other conspicuous absences. By tradition, other media and entertainment chief executives gather to pay their respects, but few are in attendance. A topic of speculation is the amount of last-minute arm-twisting Dick Cook and others at Disney had to perform to fill the tables. There is star power in evidence. I'm seated next to Jamie Lee Curtis, star of Freaky Friday, and at the same table as Diane Lane, star of Under the Tuscan Sun, both Disney productions, along with Disney studio president Nina Jacobson. Curtis is funny and charming. "You sure have something to write about," she observes as we sit down. A few tables away, I see Demi Moore and Ashton Kutcher, who is starring in a forthcoming Disney film. But I don't see anyone I recognize who isn't in some way beholden to Disney. Eisner is at the central table, in the well of the ballroom, in front of the stage, surrounded by Jane, his sons, Bob Iger, and Willow Bay. Jack Valenti, in dinner jacket and his trademark white coiffure, bounds onto the stage, seeming to defy the passage of time, and notes that he first met Eisner as a tall, gangly 20-something at ABC, who had a fresh, assertive manner spilling over with a torrent of a dozen creative ideas a minute. Within Eisner, he continues, stir the molecular contradictions of business executive and creative artist, a marriage of fire and chaos, which Michael has brought into fluid harmony. That this unseemly combination has worked to the long-term interest of the Walt Disney Company is beyond doubt. Let me phrase it this way, in a manner that every Wall Street fiscal analyst, at least those not under indictment, can understand. If you invested $10,000 in the Disney Company on the day that Michael became its leader and never sold a share, you would have today the tidy sum of $220,000. And that was before Nemo was found on DVD. When Michael became Disney's chief, its market cap was $2.1 billion. Today, December 4th, 2003, it's $48 billion. Finally, there is another side.